Okay. So again, this week's parasha is Parashas Lech Lecha. And last week we spent time on a Mishnah in Maseches Avos that dealt with Noach and Avram. And now again, we're going to start with a Mishnah in Maseches Avos. Again, from the same Perek, Perek Hay. And this time it's Perek Hay and it's Mishnah Gimel. Or Mishnah Dala, depending on which version you have. But the Mishnah reads, Asara nisyonos nisnasa Avram Avinu va'amad b'kulam. Avraham was given 10 tests. Avram, our forefather, was given 10 tests. Vo'ad ma'amad b'kulam. And he withstood them all. Lo'hidiyah kamechibasa shal Avram Avinu, to show how beloved Avram Avinu was before Hashem. So this is the famous Mishnah of Avraham's 10 tests. And the obvious question is, typically you test someone to be able to figure out where they are, where they're holding in something. A teacher tests someone to see how, tests a student to see how well the student knows the information. You test a car, you test a machine to see how well it works. You perform a test in order to figure out what you don't know. But in the case of Hashem, Rabban Hashem doesn't need to test anyone to know where they're at. Rabban Hashem knows exactly where they are at. And therefore, what exactly does a test mean when it come, when we say that Hashem tested Avraham 10 times? What does it mean, a test? So, an answer that's given is based on a pasuk. This is a pasuk after the Torah was given, where the Jewish people had heard Hashem speak to them from Har Sinai, and they went to Moshe and they said, we can't continue listening to Hashem's voice, we won't be able to withstand it. And the reply was, Al Tira'u. Moshe says to the Jewish people, do not be afraid. In order to nasais eschem, I'm not going to translate that word right now, but in order to nasais you, Hashem has come, in order that his fear should be on your face so that you shall not sin. So what does it mean, do not be afraid, because in order, nasais eschem Hashem has come. Again, in the context of the giving of the Torah. So Rashi says the word nasais means lashon harama ugedula, kamoi harimu nes. The word nasais is an expression of lifting up. Lifting up. Like a kamoi harimu nes, which means raise the banner. The word for a banner is nes. L'naseis, in this context, l'vavor naseis eschem, doesn't mean Hashem is coming to test you, but Hashem is coming to raise you up. So the word nisayon, which is the word that I use for test, for challenge, has in it the word nes, which means a banner, which means to lift up, to raise up, which means that a challenge is not because Hashem needs to figure out something, but rather the challenge, what we see as a challenge, is in order to raise us up. It's about bringing out our potential. It's about bringing out our potential and making it real. Meaning, the only way that we grow, the only way that we bring out our greatness, instead of the greatness being dormant in potential, how do we bring it out? We bring it out by being challenged. We, by being challenged and going against our nature, going against our grain, that now goes ahead and allows us to raise ourselves up. It allows us to grow. So the point of a challenge, when Hashem challenges Avram, when Hashem challenges anyone, the point is, in order for us to grow, in order for our potential to come out, in order for us to become different and uplifted and greater people, we need to be challenged. The challenges and meeting the challenge is what helps us grow. And therefore, the 10 tests of Avraham are not about trying to figure out where Avraham was holding, as much as giving Avraham the chance to grow and to be Avraham Avinu, to be Avraham our forefather, to be Avraham that would now implant in his descendants certain traits and levels of greatness that we now inherit from him and are meant to bring out within ourselves. But the 10 tests were the 10 ways by Avraham to rise, to be raised up, to be uplifted, to grow to the level of Avraham, the patriarch of the Jewish people. And And therefore, the way we have to understand the challenge, a nisayon, a test, is to see it as an opportunity, not as something that we are trying, not as something that we dread, not as something that we'd rather not, I mean, in some ways we would rather not have it, but it's in essence, a challenge, a test is the means by which we grow. I want to spend a little bit of time on this, but this whole idea of challenges being our source of growing. And I want to share with you something that I spoke about in my shul on Rosh Hashanah this year. I spoke about this idea, and I'd like to share with you how I brought it out. So I started off with the following story. The story, though, we need an introduction. We need a little Hebrew lesson. There is a word in Hebrew called zevel. There's a word zevel, Zayin Vez Lamed. Zevel means manure. It means animal waste. That's what the word zevel means. Okay? Now, there was a great tzaddik in Eretz Yisrael, Yerushalayim, his name was Rabbi Levin. And the story goes, Rabbi Levin was walking to the Kotel many, many years ago. He was going there for davening in the morning. And he passed by the municipal street cleaner. He was out there with his broom cleaning the street. And this man, this worker, this street cleaner, the street cleaner's name was Yehuda Harush. And as he was cleaning the street and he saw the great tzaddik Rabbi Levin approaching him, he was very embarrassed, here he is, the tzaddik is coming, and he's cleaning the street. So he took the broom and he hid it behind his back. And when Rabbi Levin saw him, he said, Boker Tov Yehudi Ayakar, precious Jew, good morning, and he gives him a hug. And he feels the broom behind his back. So, of course, he felt very embarrassed. And Rabbi Aryeh Levin said to him, Ani mekaneh otcha, I'm jealous of you. Said, jealous of me? He says, yes, you clean the streets of Yerushalayim. You make the streets of Yerushalayim, the holy city, clean. And Yehuda Harish said, you're jealous of me? He says, Rabbi, you spend your day in the Beit Knesset, in the Beit Medrash, and you're jealous of me? Your day is a day of learning, of praying. My day is zevel, zevel, zevel. And Rabbi Levin said, no, chas v'shalom, I'm jealous of you, you got such an important job. 20 years later, there was a gathering in memory of Rabbi Levin, and Yehuda Harush told over this story, and he said, it's been 20 years, it's 20 years later, and I still look at myself as a prince and my broom as a royal scepter. Okay. So to me, this story really can help us have a different outlook on life. And I said to the shul, I want to present to you the Rosh Hashanah 577 2016 list of potential issues and challenges for the coming year. This list is based on events of the past year. Past performance is an indicator for potential future results. And this list has been compiled by yours truly. And I have dubbed this list the Z list. Z as in zevel. And I went through a number of things. Terrorist attacks. Lone wolf are perpetrated by a terrorist organization here and abroad. Social unrest. Stabbing a terrorist attacks in Israel. Dealing with BDS, boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement against Israel. Increase of anti-Semitic incidents, especially on college campuses. Struggling to support one's family due to unemployment or underemployment. Dealing with illness, personal or the illnesses of others. The loss of loved ones and friends. And last but not least, Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump will become president of the United States. Now, that's what we're waiting for tonight to find out. Okay. This list is obviously not exhaustive. But, in other words, zevel, zevel, Zevil. But Yehuda HaRish taught us, no, it's not Zevil, Zevil, Zevil. It's scepter, scepter, scepter. Because all the challenges that we have, all the challenges that Hashem brings us, are all challenges that are meant to help us grow. The challenges are the way that we, as the nation of Hashem, proclaim Him as King in the world, and is the means by which we grow. And there's a famous story in the Gemara of Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. Perhaps I've said this story before. Gemara Baba Metzia talks about how Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, two Talmudic sages, Amoraim, that their names appear together throughout Shas, throughout the Talmud. They were actually brothers-in-law. The Gemara talks about how they became brothers-in-law. And the Gemara talks about how Reish Lakish passed away. And when Reish Lakish passed away, Rabbi Yochanan was very distraught because he lost his chavrusa, he lost his study partner. So the Gemara says that they gave Rabbi Yochanan a new chavrusa. I don't remember the name of the Amora, a new chavrusa. So they sat down and started studying together. And Rabbi Yochanan offered, you know, a thought. And his new study partner said to him, I have 24 proofs for you. And Rabbi Yochanan said to him, I need you to tell me I'm right. I need you to tell me I'm right. Mm-hmm. When I used to study with Reish Lakish, he would ask me 24 questions on everything that I said. And I'd have to find 24 answers. And because of that, that's how we got to really delve and understand the depth of the topic that we were studying. And you tell me I'm right? The Gemara says Rabbi Yochanan lost his mind. And he would go around crying and saying, Reish Lakish, where are you? Where are you? Until finally the sages prayed that Rabbi Yochanan should pass away. So the question is, why did they pray that Rabbi Yochanan should pass away? They should have prayed that he should get better. He should come back. He should be able to, you know, become mentally stable again. Why didn't they do that? The answer is because they knew that without Reish Lakish, he was just going to fall back into it. Basically, Rabbi Yochanan couldn't live with the idea that he wasn't growing in his learning. Now we understand how when you study together and you're challenged, how much, you know, we understand how that helps you grow in your understanding. The more you ask, the more you delve, the more things become clearer, the deeper you get into it. But it's not just in learning. Anytime you are challenged, that is how you grow. Every morning when you put a coin into the Pushkin Shul, it's a mitzvah, you gave tzedakah, how much did you grow from it, to be honest? Not a lot. It's not a big deal. When it's time to, let's say, give a certain amount of tzedakah that's difficult for you to give, it's hard for you to give, and you give it anyway, you've worked on yourself, you've overcome that from within yourself is telling you not to do it, that's when you grow. And therefore, everything on the Z list should really be called the S list. It shouldn't be the Zevil list, it should be the Scepter list, because this is the means by which we grow. And that is as the word Nisayon, which is the word that's used for challenge, has the word Nes, the word banner, the word to be raised up. The means by which we grow is through the challenges that we face. And Avraham was given 10 tests for him to grow to become Avraham Avinu, Avraham our patriarch. Now there is an interesting Gemara in Sanhedrin where the Gemara talks about a conversation between David HaMelech and Hashem. And David HaMelech says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, in davening, what's said, or we say, Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. And David HaMelech wanted to know why the Jewish people don't say, or in the future will not say, Elokei David. That's what it says. So Hashem answers him, that's because Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov had nisyonos, they had tests, and they passed the tests, and you haven't had those tests. So David HaMelech says, as we say, bring it on. You know, give me a test. So Kadosh Baruch Hu says to him, you know, I'm going to give you a test, and I'm even going to do you a favor, what I didn't do for Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. I'm going to let you in on what kind of a test it's going to be. and it's going to be a test regarding Devar Erva. It's going to be a test that deals with sexuality. Shortly afterwards, David had the Nisayim, the test of Batsheva, which we know is a very complicated story. At the end of the day, though, he did not pass that test. The Gemara says from there, La'ayla ma'yavi ad-damatzpa l'day Nisayim. A person should never bring himself into being tested. Mm-hmm. Which means, we know what tests are, we know what tests do, and when HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends us a test, we have to deal with that test, but don't look for them. The Rebbeinu Shlom knows what you need to grow. He'll send you the tests. Don't look for trouble. Now it's interesting, you know, when David HaMelech was saying, you know, why not say like, hey David, Hashem says, well, you need tests. What's exactly the conversation going on here? The answer is the conversation that's going on is what we've been saying. Avraham Avinu had 10 tests for him to grow and become Avraham Avinu, our patriarch. There's only 3 patriarchs. David HaMelech was saying, but I think that I can do that too. So Hashem said, meaning I can do that too. I should be able to do that too. So Hashem says, okay, you know how you do that? You got to pass a test. You have to pass a test on the level of the tests of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. David says, okay. Didn't work for David. But that's the conversation here. The conversation here between Hashem, this is a thought from Rabbi Yehuda Vakshal of the Mir Yeshiva in Yerushalayim. The conversation between David HaMelech and Hashem is this discussion. Tests are what make us grow. Tests are what made Avraham Avinu, Avraham our patriarch. David HaMelech says, I want to be that too. Hashem says, okay, I'll give you a chance. Didn't work. And then the Gemara says, an important lesson. Tests are a thing that we're given tests. They give us a chance to grow. We can grow through our tests, but don't look for them. Don't look for them. Hashem knows what you need to grow, and He will send that test to you. And just a quick comment, and that is that when Hashem sends us a test, are we to assume that every test that Hashem sends us, we can handle? So I think, what?
You think so, otherwise you wouldn't send it to us.
Well, not everybody seems to agree with that. It would seem that there are those who say that there are certain times Hashem gives a person a test that he cannot handle. But the question is, what does he do after? Meaning the actual test may have been something that he can't handle. But now the question is, what Hashem wants to see from you now is, what are you doing after that? How are you dealing with it after that? There could be tests that perhaps, there definitely are those, you know, for those that hold that, you know, maybe there are tests that you can't handle. So why did Hashem bring it to you? Don't know. But the question also, may very well be that what Hashem wants from you is not dealing with the test the first time as much as seeing what do you do with it the second time. What do you do with it? How do you deal with it afterwards? Perhaps we could even say that Hashem wants you to stumble because He wanted you to learn something from that mistake. But the question is, do you learn from the mistake or do you repeat the mistake? So whatever it may be, the test that's given to us is not a test because HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs to figure us out as much as the chance to bring out our potential. Now, sorry.
Is it also true that we don't really know when we're being tested?
No.
I think if King David knew that he is being tested right now, he may have behaved differently.
Well, every time we have a test, we have bechira, right? Every time we have a test, we have a choice to make.
But we don't know that this is the test.
No, we know what the test is, but we have to figure out what's the right way to go. So David HaMelech, again, to get into that whole, I mean, the subject of David HaMelech is a whole big discussion. And clearly, David HaMelech was not guilty of adultery because he never could have married her afterwards. So it was a much more complicated situation than just taking the story at faith.
Talking so about it in general, so if even the 10 tests that Abraham got, he left his life the way he thought he should live, not because, okay, here is my test.
He knows it was a test. When Hashem said to him, bring your son, as a sacrifice.
That particular one,
no, so all of them. I mean, I'm not sure why you assume that we don't know. I mean, every time we...
Because I think it would be much easier for us to pass it if we knew that this is the one that we will be measured by for the rest of our life. That's why I think if David knew that this is the, you know, one time... Don't look.
I don't want to get personal, Boris, but you've never been facing something that you see as a test?
Yes,
okay, and when you get them, when you have that test, right?
Well,
you're still trying to figure out what's the way to go. Every time you have to sit down to figure out what's the direction to go, what's the right way to go, what's the wrong way to go, or how much will I control myself here, how much will I not control myself here? That's a test.
No, but people face these choices every day. I suspect that Abraham was tested more than 10 times.
Yes, but the major tests were these.
But how do we know which is the major, which is the minor?
Once the Torah tells us of the major, or the one that minor.
I as a human, how do I know? How does Abraham as a human know?
Because when Abraham is being told by Hashem to do something,
then
he can realize that. Or if Abraham realizes that, you know, something here doesn't make sense. Something here really doesn't make sense. He can realize on his own that he's being challenged here.
So when, I don't know, what...
There's a difference, you know, every day we're tested, but we know, and we still know within ourselves which ones are the bigger ones, which ones
are
the smaller ones.
We will go through them. Okay.
We will go through them, the other 9 examples. Okay? And the truth is, we know all these things are mentioned in the Chumash, so that's how we know which one are the ten major tests. Now again, there's a whole discussion exactly how to count them. So once you wrote that up, so let's go through the tests.
The biggest test was Akedah.
Yeah.
So the question is, if God told me beforehand you'd be the father of the Jewish people.
Well, that was part of the test.
But did he know?
That was part of the test. Part of the test was the fact that Hashem is telling him to slaughter his son, and Hashem had promised him that he's going to have children and have a nation. That was all part of the test. That was part of the challenge. Okay, so I'm going to read to you first how the Rambam, in his commentary on Ovis, how he enumerates the tests. Okay? So the Rambam says like this. Test number 1 is the beginning of this week's Parsha, Lech Lecha. Leave your father, your homeland, to the land that I will show you. I'll make you a great nation. That's a hard test, isn't it, right? Leave your father's home and I'll make you a great nation. Would you leave your father's home if Hashem promised you you're going to be a great nation?
He's 75 years old.
But Hashem promised him he's going to have a great nation. So again, that's a question. What exactly is the test there? Okay? Now, Beis, right after Hashem tells Abraham about a future in Eretz, and to go to Eretz Canaan, and he goes to Eretz Canaan, what happens next? A famine. Okay?
Famine.
A famine. He comes to Eretz Canaan, he's got to leave because there was a famine. Okay?
Well, I don't want
to go through each one right now. Just let's go through the list. Okay? The third is the second was the famine, the third is when he went to Mitzrayim and Sarah was taken away from him. The fourth was his war with the 4 kings. The Torah describes a war of 4 kings against 5 kings. The 4 kings defeat the 5 kings. The 4 kings take Lot, his nephew, as a captive, and Abraham fights with them. The fifth is, the way the Rambam writes it, is having to take Hagar for a wife after it seems like no children from Sarah. The sixth, Bris Mila. The seventh, when the king of Gerar takes Sarah away. The eighth, chasing away Hagar and Yishmael. The way he counts it is the eighth, chasing away Hagar. The ninth, chasing away Yishmael. And the tenth is the Akedah. That's how the Rambam counts it. Rashi, in his commentary, counts it a little bit differently. Rashi counts the first two as Avraham's problems with Nimrod. When Avraham was believing in Hashem and teaching the belief in Hashem, the king Nimrod wanted to get rid of him. So the first test, according to Rashi, is that Avraham had to hide from Nimrod for 13 years. The second was when Nimrod got hold of him and threw him into the Kibshanesh, into the furnace. Then the third is Lech Lecha, etc. So there's They have different, the Mefarshim have different ways of how they count them.
But not all of them, not in all of them, Abraham had a choice. If somebody is thrown into fire, they don't have that question.
Well, Nimrod had gave him a choice. Nimrod told him, either don't believe in God, if you keep believing in God, I throw you into the furnace. So he had a choice. He had a choice.
And famine, I guess he could leave.
So the famine, that's a question. Should he leave? Shouldn't he have left? Well, I mean, that's a whole, let me bring out something here. That's a good point that you're saying. And that is that Rashi, after bringing all 10, Rashi says, Harei Asara, he counts all 10. V'loihirer achami doisev yisparach meroiv ahavasai. And Avraham never, hirer achami doisev means, Avraham never questioned Hashem because of the tremendous love that Avraham had for Hashem. So when you read Rashi, Rashi is is seemingly pointing out to us that Rashi lists all 10, and then he says, in all 10, Avraham did not in his mind question Hashem because of his great love. Which means that in every one of these tests, Avraham could have questioned Hashem. And because he didn't question Hashem, he therefore withstood the test. Now, some of them, the whole test may have been whether he would question Hashem or not. You know? So for instance, Lech Lecha. Hashem said, Lech Lecha. No, I'm not going. Hashem told you to go. And even more so, Hashem says, you're going to be a great nation and you're going to have this land. He made big promises. What's the test? So one answer is that the test is, yeah, it's true that Hashem promises Avraham a lot of things. But as we know, Avraham and Haran already began spreading the belief in Hashem. He already had brought many, many people to the belief in Hashem. His outreach was working. And now Hashem says, okay, drop it, and now go, and now drop it here, and now go to Canaan and do it there. Yeah, Hashem says, do it, I got to do it. But what's churning inside of me? What's going on inside of me? Am I questioning and saying, boy, this what a shame. What a shame, I had such a good thing going, and now I got to leave it. Is Avraham going to do that or not? When the Torah says, Hashem says to Avraham, Lech Lecha, and Avraham goes, if the Torah is telling us Avraham went, it means he did what he was supposed to do fully. Because you may say, what's the going? Does he have a choice not to go? But how does he go? And the answer is he goes wholeheartedly. And that could have been his whole test. Now, based on this, I'm going to share you a thought from Rav Nissim Kaplan, they're also from the Mir Yeshiva in Yerushalayim, where he actually is asking a question that many of the commentaries ask on those who learn like the Rambam and don't start the tests from Avraham being thrown into the burning furnace, where basically he was ready to give up his life for his belief in Hashem. They don't count that as a challenge. They start from Lech Lecha. And so many commentaries ask, why? How come they don't start counting the fact that Avraham was given a test? Will he stick to his belief in Hashem? Or will he give up his life? He was ready to give up his life. A miracle occurred and he survived. But isn't that a test? Why isn't that test number one? So the answer that Rav Kaplan brings is an answer that the way I understand it is the following. You know, Avraham has on his own come to believe in Hashem. He has spread the belief in Hashem. Avraham understands and has a clear perception of what Hashem is. And if now someone says to Avraham, you know, give this up or give up your life, clearly there's a challenge to it. But when you're the kind of believer like Avraham is, you know, there's a certain, for somebody else it may be a bigger challenge. Because Avraham is so dedicated to Hashem, he knows that this is the ultimate dedication to Hashem, or that there can't be anything otherwise. There just can't be.
You could say it about all the
time. Well, wait a minute, let's see. But let's say by the case of Lech Lecha, according to what we just said before, right? Yes, Avraham is a dedicated servant. But, you know, sometimes when you're asked to do less, it can be a bigger challenge. Mm-hmm. Yeah, to give up my life, of course, I mean, you want me to give up believing in Hashem? That's not possible. But now Hashem says, I want you to stop all your outreach you've been doing for me, right? And I want you to stop it, and you're going over there. And don't worry, things will be good over there. There's a challenge to that. especially in the sense that Avraham himself is a dedicated servant of Hashem, and he's accomplishing so much in the service of Hashem. And now Hashem says, stop, stop. You got to go now to a whole new place, a whole new area, a whole new country, a whole new set of people. And it'll work there too. There's a challenge to that. There's a challenge. And it was a very big challenge for Avraham. So sometimes you can be asked to do less, but depending on, so to speak, you know, what it is that's being asked of you, sometimes in some ways the bigger thing may not be as big a challenge as a smaller thing.
What about the last one?
Which one?
Isaac.
What about it? Yeah, Barry just said there was an obvious contradiction in Hashem's words. An obvious contradiction. Hashem says, first Hashem says, "Ki b'Yitzchak k'chor l'chazara, Yitzchak will be your progeny," and now slaughter Yitzchak. Now bring Yitzchak as a carbon. Now again, you may not have a choice, but how you deal with it? There's a lot of mefarshim. There's one pirush that wants to say Avraham could have made a whole calculation to say that Hashem really doesn't want me to do it. That's how some learn it. But another way of learning it is, you know, good, there's a steer, there's a contradiction here. How much does that contradiction affect Avraham? How much does it affect his dedication? So in many ways, how wholeheartedly Avraham does this is part of the test. It's part of the test. And therefore, in essence, you could have Lech Lecha being considered one of the big tests that develop Avraham at a level that whether to give up his life doesn't do as much. Avraham already was a tremendous believer in Hashem. He was a tremendous believer in Hashem. Now he had to deal with Hashem asking to do things that don't seem to fit. They don't seem to fit. And that's Avraham's test. Okay. The next thing I want to share with you. We know that when Avraham has to go down to Egypt, so he says to, let's take a look on page 56. Page 56, Pasuk Yud. Vahira of Ba'aretz, there was a famine in the land. Vayerid Avram Mitzrayim la'gur sham. Avram went down to Egypt to live there. Kichaveda ra'av Ba'aretz, because the famine was very difficult. Vahika shehikra levoi Mitzrayim. As he approached Egypt, Vayimra Sarai Ishtai, he said to Sarai, his wife, Hinei no yadat yishifas mare'at. Behold, I know that you are a beautiful woman. Vahaya kiru aysacha mitzrim v'amru ishtai zeis. The Mitzrim will see you, they'll say this is his wife, v'hargu oisi v'isachi chayu. They'll kill me and they'll keep you alive. Imrina achaisiyat, say now you're my sister, l'man yitavli b'avurech v'chaisanav shibiglalech. So that it will be good for me because of you, I'll benefit through you, and my soul will live through you. So, one of the big questions is, what is Avram talking about exactly gaining? You know, clearly he wants Sarai to be called his sister, that don't kill him. But he also mentions, I'll also benefit, which Rashi says means they'll give me gifts. And we know that he had many gifts, and he accepted the gifts. Okay, why exactly he was pushing for the gifts, the Ramban says, has his explanation for it. But there is a question that's asked about the difference at this point and the difference between later on in the Parsha. At this point, Avraham receives gifts. We know clearly he receives much gifts from Paro, and he accepts it. Later on, when there is a war between the four kings and the five kings, okay, page 64, there's a war between four kings and the five kings. The four kings defeat the five kings and they take Lot, Avraham's nephew, as a captive. And after Avraham defeats the four kings, so on page 64, Pasuk Chaf Aleph. Vayomer Melech Sodom el Avram. The king of Sodom said to Avram, Ten li hanefesh baruchush kachlach. Give me the people. You take all the property. Vayomer Avram Melech Sodom. Harimaisi yadi el Hashem kelayon kenei shmayim v'aretz. Avram says to the king of Sodom, I lift my hand and I promise to Hashem, creator of heaven and earth. Imichut v'atzreich nal v'makach mikol ha-shalach. A string, a shoe strap, I will not take from you. And you shall not say, I made Avram rich. So the king of Sodom says, look, you fought a war. As the winner of the war, all the captives belong to you. All the booty belongs to you. Everything belongs to you. But I'm asking you for the people. You know, give me my people back. And everything else you can keep. It's rightfully yours. And Avram says, no, I'm not taking anything. I'm not taking a string, I'm not taking a shoe strap, I'm taking nothing from you. I don't want you to say that I made Avram rich. It should be clear that Hashem made me rich. So the commentaries ask, so how come in Mitzrayim he was so quick to take everything? Why in Mitzrayim was he so ready to take everything? So Rabbi Yisrael Reisman brings an answer from the Talmud Rebbe of Eretz Yisrael. It was a very, very interesting answer, very interesting. And the answer is based on the fact that we need to look back after Avraham leaves Egypt, and this is on page 58. Take a look, page 58, Perek Yud Gimel Pasuk Aleph, chapter 13, verse 1. Vayal Avraham Mitzrayim. Avraham went up from Egypt, hu v'ishtoi v'chala shaloi, he, his wife, and everything that he had, v'loit imay hanegba, and loit with him, southward. V'Avraham kaved ma'oid, Avraham was loaded down, v'amikda b'kasm v'azav, cattle, silver, and gold. Avraham was a rich man. V'yelech l'masav, pasuk gimel, v'yelech l'masav, and Avraham proceeded to his journeys, Minegev ad Beiskel, from the south until Beiskel, Aramokim Asher Hayashem Aloi Betchila, to the place where his tent was to begin with. The Pasuk, when the Pasuk says, Vayelech Masav, he went to his travels, what that means, Rashi says, is that Avraham went back to all the stops he made until then. We know that Avraham had to go from Canaan to Mitzrayim. Now when he went back from Mitzrayim to Canaan, he stopped at all the places that he stopped when he first went down. Now when he was coming back, he stopped at all those places. So Rashi says, why did he stop at all those places? So Rashi, in his second explanation, it says he went back to all those places to pay his debts. Meaning, when Avraham went on his way down to Mitzrayim, basically Avraham had to do things on credit and all those places that he went. He didn't have anything. He had to do everything on credit. Now he had the money, so he went back to all the places to pay up all the debts that he had. So the Talmud Rebbe said, that's the difference between now and later. Why did Avraham take the gifts from Mitzrayim? We know there's a pasuk that says, Sayne matanas yichya, pasuk amishle, the one who hates gifts will live. But you know why Avraham took the gifts? He needed the money. He had debts to pay. And if he had debts to pay, and he had chance to be able now to get money, to be able to pay his debt, to get money, he was going to take it. He had no reason not to take it. There's a pasuk, Eved Leiva Leishmalva. A borrower is an Eved, is a slave to the lender. That's how the Lova, the borrower, should see himself. He's really enslaved. He's really obligated to the borrower. At that point, Avraham is not going to reject gifts. Why should Avraham reject gifts? He needs the money. Later on, he climbs out of Mitzrayim. He's a wealthy man. He's so wealthy that, you know, him and Lot, they have so much stuff, they can't live together. But at the point where Avraham was offered all the money and all the property from Sodom, at that point, he didn't need the money. And at that point, then he could say, I don't want to take anything, I don't want gifts from you, I don't want you to say that you made me rich. All those things weren't relevant at the point of time that Avraham needed the money. And really, the Talmud Rebbe was using this to discuss the whole idea of borrowing money. How important it is that when we borrow money to pay it back, and that borrowing money should not be seen, should not be taken lightly. Eved loyve le'ish malve. A borrower becomes a slave to the lender. He really is strongly obligated. And borrowing money and not paying up debts is a very serious thing. So Reisman tells a very interesting story of the Rav of the city of Lodz in Poland before World War II. And this Rav had borrowed money from people, not for himself, but to help out other people. And now it came to the point where he needed to pay up the debts and he had no money. So he decided he was going to travel to Warsaw to the Ger Rebbe. It was a long trip, and he took a train. And he went to speak to the Ger Rebbe. And there was someone that was waiting to speak to the Ger Rebbe. But when the Rav of Lodz came, they let him go in first. And this was that this person who was waiting to go in was the person who told the story. And he related how when the Rav of Lodz went in, he went in looking very agitated. And when he came out, he was even more agitated. Now he was really, he was in worse shape coming out than he was going in. So the person whose time was to go speak to the Ger Rebbe went in, posed the question, whatever he had to speak to the Ger Rebbe about. And then the Ger Rebbe said to him, the man who just came in before you was the Rebbe of Lodz. He is a very hush of a person, is a very prominent person, and I want you to travel back with him. He shouldn't travel himself. I want you to travel back with him. So this chassid of the Ger Rebbe did so, and as they traveled together, the story came out, where basically the Rebbe of Lodz went to the Ger Rebbe, told him a situation about the debts, and the Ger Rebbe said to him, basically, if you don't know where you're going to pay from, you don't borrow. That's what he said to him. And as much as the Rebbe of Lodz kept pushing him and pushing him and pushing him, the Ger Rebbe had nothing more to say than you know, if you don't know where you're going to, how you're going to pay it, don't borrow the money. So of course the man left even more agitated than before. The truth is that after the man left, the Ger Rebbe sent a cable to his chassidim in Lodz to help this Rebbe out. But he wanted to impress this story upon him, that you don't borrow money unless you know how you're going to pay. Now, again, I'm not here to comment on everybody's situation. If you go over to a person and borrow money, as Reisman points out, and the person, you say to the person, I don't know if I'm able to pay you, and the person still gives you the money, okay. But to go ahead and to start borrowing money without knowing how you're going to pay is something that a person has to be very, very careful of. Because not paying back a debt is a very serious matter. And that's what the Talmud Rebbe wants to explain, the difference between Avram before and Avram after. Avram before has debts. And therefore, when he has a chance to be able to get money to pay his debts, he will do so. After he doesn't have the debts anymore, at that point, Avram is not looking for gifts. He's not looking for handouts. He says to the king of Sodom, I don't want you to say that you have made Avram rich.
But you said that he was also rich when he came back.
Fine.
For where?
Mitzrayim. Meaning he went down to Mitzrayim. He had to do things on credit.
Yeah.
While he was in Mitzrayim, he was given many gifts.
Right.
And then he went back to pay.
I know, but after that, he still had a lot left.
Right.
How can he take credit?
So he took more than he needed.
You mean the first time?
Yeah.
Maybe he figured he would be able to. I mean, he figured he could. He probably figured that he had a way of doing something.
You're
bringing up a good point. And I think the answer will be that Avram figured that he would be able to pay them back. Maybe he didn't know. And when this opportunity came, he was not going to take it.
But am I right in understanding that he took more than he needed to pay?
He was given more.
He was given more.
He was given.
So he did not assume. He knew how much he owed. He
should. Yeah. Well, I don't know if he could say to Paro that's enough.
Okay.
You know, Paro's giving him all these things, and he says.
But that was also a king.
Yeah, but at this point, once he's accepting the gift, I don't know if he could start saying to Paro, you know, just give me this and then give me that. The King of Stone? Yeah, it wasn't like he couldn't refuse a king.
Right.
But once he was already, I'm thinking the answer to your question is once he was taking from him,
right.
He wasn't going to say, you know, then already wasn't going to, he wasn't going to break it up. One last thought, quickly. Abraham says to Sarah, as he's going down to Mitzrayim, Hine no yadati. Behold, now I know that you were a beautiful woman. Sounds like he didn't know that before. And Rashi comments that how did he realize that Sarah was so beautiful? Because he saw her reflection in the water. They passed by a body of water, and he looked into the water, and he saw a reflection, and he saw that she was a beautiful woman. And therefore he says, all right, now we got to be careful in Mitzrayim. So the Mefarshim ask, there's a Gemara in Kedushin that the Gemara says, you may not marry a woman without looking at her. That's what it says. You have to, before you marry her, you've got to look at her. Right, you have to look at her. Because, you know, to get married, not to look at her and get married and then give a look and be very disappointed is not a healthy situation. So how did Avraham marry Sarai without looking at her? So one answer that the Marsha has two answers. The commentary Marsha has two answers. One answer is that he actually, before he got married to her, he looked at her. You know, the chuppah picked it up, he looked at her. And then afterwards he did it. And he figured, okay, been married for a while, so she probably doesn't look the same. And then when he saw her in the reflection of the water, he saw she's still beautiful. That's one answer. The other answer that Marsha gives, again, these are levels that we don't fully, you know, we can't completely comprehend, but the Marsha says, the explanation is that, well, it depends. If you plan on looking at your wife, then you should look at her before you marry her. If you have no plans to look at her, you don't got to look at her. That's the other answer the Marsha gives.
Say it again.
The Marsha says, if you have plans on looking at your wife, then look at her before you get married. But if you have no plans of looking at her, means... this is not, it doesn't matter, then you don't have to do it. So Reb Nissen Kaplan brings an answer from someone. It's an interesting answer that he says like this. Avraham, when Avraham first saw Sarai's beauty, he in his mind, this was not a physical beauty. Her beauty was really coming from the Kedusha, the sanctity of the holiness that radiated from her. That is how he perceived her beauty. He perceived her beauty as the radiance of holiness that was radiating from her. And therefore, he figured the Mitzrayim are going to look at her. The Mitzrayim can't appreciate that. The Mitzrayim can't appreciate the holiness that's on her. You want to appreciate holiness, you have to have a certain kind of set of eyes. It's not everybody can perceive that holiness, can perceive the holiness and therefore the beauty of that holiness. But then he saw her in the water. So this answer suggests, interestingly, I don't sure I'd agree with it necessarily, but this answer says, this person wanted to say that kind of holy radiance, you shouldn't be able to see it in a mirror. It doesn't reflect. Doesn't reflect. So when he noticed the beauty in the water, now he realized that this beauty was not only a beauty of her holiness, but an actual physical beauty.
Well, it's a cute answer.
It's a nice answer. And it's an interesting answer. You know, we've mentioned many times before, especially it talks about how Rivka, the Torah makes special mention, Rivka was beautiful, Rachel was beautiful. Why? What's the point of that? And the answer that I always had understood was that, again, the beauty, their physical beauty was a manifestation of their inner beauty. Their beauty of their neshama manifested itself in their physical appearance. But I always understood it was a physical appearance. You know, it came out in the physical. According to this answer, it's not coming out in the physical. It didn't necessarily have to come out in the physical. There's a certain radiance of Kedusha that comes. Radiance, Kedusha, holiness has a beauty to it. And in order to perceive it, you need a certain set of eyes. Aram figured the Mitzrayim wouldn't have that. but when, and it was also something that should not have been perceived, should be reflected physically, and therefore when he saw her beauty, he realized how actually beautiful she was, and therefore they had to deal with it.
Well, was that before he told her to be her sister, or did that happen?
Before. That's why he told her that.
Right. Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you, Rabbi.
I wish you all a good evening.